past years. We want to honor the time and the effort your respective committees have put into this work already through many legislative hearings, and we appreciate the opportunity you've given us and local governments that we work with as a partner to present ideas and information to your respective committees. In our letter, we highlighted some of the concerns related to the proposed budget reductions, and I'll go just highlight a couple of those. I won't go through the entire letter. You can read that as you desire. One of them I want to mention first was actually a policy item in the legislation regarding a rulemaking moratorium. We currently have three rules that we are proposing, have begun the process of amendment, and each one of them is tied to recent statute changes that compel these rule changes, and in each case, we're looking to streamline the process of using those rules. And one of them, actually, we're just for example, our conservation cost share program, we're looking at removing majority of that rule and putting most of it into a much more streamlined process. And I think the number I heard from my staff was it was 42 pages of rule. We'll be having it down to 6 pages of rule once we're completed. I know Senator Peterson was on the committee and Representative Beard have been working on this legislation, and we hope to find some flexibility to make that current language work for us and for others, because rulemaking is an important part of how we carry out our programs. To the budget issues, the primary concern that we see is the technical capacity reductions across both the state and local levels in the proposed budget scenarios. When we say technical capacity, that means staff expertise in the form of engineers, biologists, easement specialists, hydrologists at the local and the state level. We've had reductions over the last several years. I think last year was 9.8%, and the planning before that was between 5 and 10%. So we're looking at stacking these reductions on top of each other over time, and that does cause consequences. And even though we've been able to generate some more alternative and hopefully cost-effective measures, such as we have joint engineering positions that are combined between a number of stormwater conservation districts, we've seen a sharing of planning and zoning staff that are carrying out a number of regulations that are mandated by the state. They're doing multiple things across organizations and across local governments. We have shared positions with the Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Department of Transportation, the DNR. We've worked to try and partner with all of these organizations to make the most of our limited staffing capacity. We also have pursued grant funding to develop partnerships with some of our non-government organizations. With Pheasants Forever and Ducks Unlimited, we have staff that are jointly housed in local conservation district offices doing work that is tied to both the non-government organizations' interests and the state's interests. Doing conservation, selling conservation on private land, which is what we do, is a face-to-face transaction. People don't just sign up for something through the mail and have something happen on their property. We have to explain the options to them, persuade them as to what the preferred option is, let them know when the funding's available, how much of it is going to be required of their commitment to put into that project, and then be around to make sure that project is done right and is going to be there for the long haul. We have to have people that make those face-to-face transactions possible to get the results, the projects, the programs that we administer. With that, I just wanted to conclude on your pile. Last night when I went home, I grabbed the mail, and the Outdoor News had a little comment here from one of our soil and water conservationists. I hadn't planned to use this, but since it was there, I thought I would like to just to let you know that the cuts that they're experiencing come from multiple directions. The state cuts certainly are part of that. This comment letter is from the Steele County Soil and Water Conservation District just south of here, and they mention the cuts that they've experienced at the local level. Counties who provide their local revenue are being reduced. The federal agencies are in the same position. Of course, you are as well. They highlight that since 2004, they've had a 30% reduction. That's in actual dollars in terms of the state's commitment to their operations. And that's the base funding they use to go out and seek grants and federal contributions to get projects on the ground. They also, in this note, highlight the importance and the pressures of private land that we're seeing today We know that, you know, development, we know that the pressure to grow energy, food, fiber, et cetera, on our lands are going to keep growing, and we have to make sure that we have the resources in place, the projects in place to make sure that our lands are going to be protected for the long haul. So, Mr. Chairman, I will conclude my comments and stand for any questions.
Thank you, Director Jaski. Questions for the director. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Jaski, referencing the rulemaking moratorium, you know, I'd like to give members a little background on that. You know, we had the first hearing on that issue and then, of course, received a significant amount of opposition from the agencies that we were asking to get together and just look at where the duplication was going on and try and address that duplication, which I think is just an activity that good government in a declining economy and a shrinking workforce ought to be looking at. And so I intentionally delayed the second hearing for over 3 weeks and gave all those agencies, including yours, 3 weeks to bring the rules back that they wanted exempt from this moratorium. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't have that file with me. We exempted all the rules that the agency wanted left out. Was this one not exempted in your mind, or
Director Jaski?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Peterson, I don't have that in front of me either, so I apologize. But I'll take a more careful look at that, and if it isn't in there, we'll make sure we get you the information that is the precise exemption language that would make this rule that I just described go forward. If you're willing to do that,
yeah. Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, members, I just want to be clear that I think in a lot of the deadlines we're asked to work under, in particular the staff is work under, I think we all can agree that over three full weeks, as I stated, was given to these five agencies to come back with the rules that they wanted exempted from this moratorium. And like I said, to the best of my knowledge, I think that's ample time. We intentionally delayed the second hearing, and there's been more very, very significant effort. I had specific rules that were brought to us from members of the other minority party, and those were accommodated. I cannot think of one rulemaking request that wasn't accommodated by extending a deadline or exempting a certain set of rules. And so I hope the committee members keep that in mind as we move forward and discuss this topic in the future.
Thank you, Senator Peterson, for those comments. Additional questions for Director Jaski? Director Jaski, are you here empowered by the governor to work with us to get this done?
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm here to work with you as needed. Ms. Blackburn is also going to be here representing Bowser. We are in regular and daily, if not more often, contact with the governor's staff to work through items that we believe you are concerned about and we are concerned about as well. So that's the approach we will be taking.
And Director, I would just encourage that communication between you, Deputy Director Blackburn, that you work very, very close with them so that we can be here to be serious and know exactly where we're all at, and you'll need to know exactly where the governor is at and how these negotiations go forward. So, Director Jaski, thank you for accommodating our schedule and coming in. I think... why don't we, Mr. Reinholtz, revert back to the spreadsheets, and then, members, we will, when the Commissioner Austin comes in, we will revert to Commissioner Austin. Members, this room is reserved at noon, so we will go until just before that, but I believe that it's going to be a very well-attended hearing at noon, so we need to leave time to allow orderly transition of the room. So. With that time frame, back to Mr. Reinholtz. And Mr. Reinholtz, we have the Senate, so you'll work with Senates, I don't know, back and forth, or however you're going to do it, whatever's normal for how you do it. I don't want to disrupt what is longstanding tradition of how we do these side by side. Mr. Reinholtz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the conference committee. I'll pick up where I left off in the spreadsheet, which it's the second page, but the number on the summary page had no numbers. The number on the bottom where I'm picking off is number one. And once again, what this is showing is the changes the Senate and the House made And what I'll highlight is those changes by the fund by agency now. So we're on page one, and I'll start with line 16, row 16. This reduces the community technical assistance grants. Both House and Senate reduced that $578,000 over the biennium. Line 17 is a Clean Water Partnership grant program. The House reduces that by $3,684,000 more than the Senate does. 18 is the subsurface treatment system. That is reduced in the Senate by $112,000 and in the House by $750,000. Water operations in the Senate is reduced by $414,000, nothing in the House as far as a reduction there. Feedlot grants is reduced $588,000 in both. Neither side had the wild rice program funding that was recommended by the governor, requested by the governor, I should say. On line 22 is the environmental health and biomonitoring. Both sides reduced the general fund appropriation that by $870,000. The House does replace a portion of that with environmental funding, and you'll see that later. Line 23 is to the multimedia operations reduction in the PCA, 732 reduction in the Senate, $1.378 million in the House. Neither side has any funding out of the general fund for the proposed transfer of the EQB to the PCA. Line 25 is the reduction in the administrative services section. The Senate at $1,216,000 in the reduction, the House at $2,432,000. The summary of the general fund changes in the PCA then are as a reduction of $5,160,000 by the Senate and $10,930,000 by the House. Next, I would move on to line 29 is the environmental fund change items in the PCA. Both sides increased the air permit funding by the requested amount of $501,000. Neither side has the EQB transfer in. Line 31, both sides did the Senate or the House and the Senate increase by $630,000 for the electronic waste extension. Line 32, the water rule study, that is a Senate-only position. It was in Senate File 196, funds that for $250,000. 33, the Senate appropriates a new $800,000 for feedlot permitting. Line 34, it was a position the governor requested not taken on the Metro landfill fee expansion. Line 35, once again, Senate has $300,000 in new environmental fund for the county feedlot grants. Moving down to the remediation fund, House and Senate have the same positions in there. It extends out the petroleum remediation program and also made a reduction that was requested by the governor in the voluntary investigation cleanup appropriation. Moving down to line 46, this is some state government special revenue funding. Both sides had on line 46 a slight change in the wastewater operator certification, which was a governor's recommendation. If we move down to the summary for the agency on line 56, you'll see the total funding, all funds for the agency in the Senate version, $315,935,000. The House version, $308,863,000. So there's a difference there. The Senate spending, $7,120,000 more than the House in the side-by-side. Next section, beginning on line 59, is revenue changes within the PCA. Line 60 and 61 is a change that the Senate has that moves one half of the expected revenue from the penalties, which currently goes into the environmental fund. The Senate moves one half of that into the general fund. The House does not do that. That is a total of $1.538 million then lost to the environmental fund but gained by the general fund. Metro landfill, neither side did the Metro landfill. On the 63, the ethanol facilities change. This is the Senate-only position from Senate File 435 where there's $40,000 in each year lost in revenue to the environmental fund from changes made to the statutory language on what is required as far as ethanol facilities, EAWs. Line 64, the Senate has language that reduces the transfer from the remediation fund to the environmental fund. The House does not have that language. It's a total of $5,652,000 is the change, the Senate change there, from what the governor and the base recommendation was. On line 67, that was not that was a position neither side took, excuse me. On line 68, both there's slight revenue that went with increase in spending on the wastewater operator certificate out of the state government special revenue fund. That is the PCA. I can move now on to the page two, would be the DNR.
Mr. Reynolds, why don't we have Senate staff start through the DNR?
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds.
Mr. Chairman and members, moving on to page two, Department of Natural Resources, again, we'll just focus on the column of House minus Senate. It's over towards the right. The first difference, the $70,000 difference, general fund, the House made a little bit bigger cut to minerals management. The next difference, both the House and the Senate had the same cuts to iron ore or minerals co-op research and iron ore co-op research. The next difference here we have is in ecological management. The House had a $1.5 million bigger general fund reduction than the Senate. Both sides, the Senate did a little bit combo general fund change with invasive species. We reduced general fund spending for terrestrial invasive species by $608,000, but then added back $600,000 back for aquatic invasive species of general fund dollars. The House has a straight $700,000 reduction to invasive species, so the net effect is about $692,000 less spending for invasives than the Senate. As far as water management goes, the Senate had a $3.1 million reduction. The House has a close to a $6 million reduction, difference of $2.87 million. The Senate has a provision allowing it's a special reimbursement for a Red River State Rec area. There's booked $34,000 here in the spreadsheet, but it's sort of just a straight reimbursement. It's not a House position. There's no change. Both the House and the Senate did not do a Gov's Rec for the Red River mediation reduction. The Mississippi Headwaters, the House has a $53,000 per year reduction for the Mississippi Headwaters, and also a $5,000 per year reduction for the Leech Lake portion of that program. Both the House and the Senate reduced the funding for the ring dikes by $125,000 per year. And now on line 95 is the governor's proposal that both the House and the Senate picked up, is to move a lot of the funding in the waters department that comes in through fees. Currently, that goes to the general fund, to move this over to the natural resources fund. So this $10,000 reduction here is then picked up again in the natural resources fund. So this is just a fund swap. The next one, line 96, forest management reduction. The House has a $2.4 million higher reduction to forestries from the general fund. Forest Council's reduction, the House and Senate are pretty close, so only $4,000 difference. The Forest Program, which is this is a House only reduction by $166,000. Both the House and the Senate picked up the governor's rec of reducing the forest research at the U of M. So that's the same, $394,000. Parks and Trails reduction. This here, the Senate has a higher general fund reduction to Parks and Trails, $6.1 million reduction from the Senate and a $4.28 from the House. The Senate's reduction is about a 15% reduction that the Senate has sort of applied a 15% mostly across the board reduction to most general fund areas. So this reduction here on the Senate side is 15%. The Senate covers the cost of this Lake County ATV trail with the general fund. It's $100,000. The House picks up, does a similar thing, but picks up the funding through an appropriation out of the ATV account. The Forest Campground fees, this again is another instance where the it's just a moving of money between the general fund to the Natural Resources Fund. This was a governor's position, so this spending here on line 102 is again picked up later in the Natural Resources Fund, so it's just a fund swap. Prairie Wetlands reductions, the House and the Senate are pretty close. The House has a little bit bigger reduction by $6,000. Neither the House or the Senate picked up the governor's rec to fund bovine TB and the chronic wasting disease. The governor had about $1.9 million one-time spending on this out of the general fund. The House and the Senate do some other spending on this area later on using the Environmental Natural Resources Trust Fund. The general fund reduction on line 105 is the same between the House and the Senate, and this was also the Gov's level. And then the Senate on line 106 has a little bit extra reduction of some money that was coming from the DNR and being moved to the Environmental Quality Board. It's a $14,000 reduction. So the net general fund reduction for the Senate is $29.5 million. Again, a little over $10,000 of that is just a fund swap. And the House is at $35.6 million. Next, we have the Natural Resources Fund changes. Wherever you see blanks in both the House and the Senate, it's mostly because there are governor's changes that weren't picked up in either the House or the Senate. So the first two lines here, line 110 and 111, the governor had proposed moving a bunch of funding from direct appropriations to statutory appropriations, and neither the House or the Senate picked up most of those. The House picked up some later on in the Game and Fish Fund, but for the most part, the House or Senate did not accept those governor's proposals. So lines 110 and 111 is one of those instances. Line 112 is a Senate-only provision. Currently, the base appropriation out of this mining administrative account is too high because there's not enough fees coming into it. And so this is probably something that should have been in the governor's bill. There isn't enough money in that account to actually make the base appropriation. So Senate has adjusted this appropriation to merely match the fees that are coming in. Lines 114 is the moving of the general fund appropriation for waters over to the Natural Resources Fund. That's a House and Senate and a governor's position. The governor had this making a statutory appropriation, but the House and Senate are making it a direct. On line 115 is where the governor had appropriated $7.9 million for invasive species. That was tied to the increase in the boat fees. The House or the Senate did not do that. The Senate on line 116 is increasing the appropriation out of the current invasive species account by $1.5 million. This is a Senate-only proposal. And this is more, and later on we'll probably have to talk about how there's different moving parts in how the House and the Senate deal with invasive species. And later on, some other day, I have another table that shows the total spending for invasive species and how each side is addressing that. And this is one of the parts on the Senate side. Line 117, it's the reduction. Currently some ATV account funding is in ecological services, and the House has removed that fund, that part of the ATV funding from the ecological services. Line 118, the House has picked up a governor's proposal for money out of the water access account to monitor lake levels. That's $1 million. The Senate did not do that. Line 119, the Senate is proposing to do a partial proposal from the governor for spending some ATV money on forest roads. The Senate's doing that at $200,000 for the biennium. The House is not doing it. And again, it's about half of what the governor had proposed. Line 120 is part of the Senate's proposals of closing down estate nurseries. This would cover the costs of the layoffs and the other unemployment costs and the other one-time costs associated with closing the nurseries. This would come out of the FMIA account. And later on, when we get to the revenues, this is paid for by revenues from selling off the nursery's assets. The governor had proposed on line 121 moving all the forest management investment accounts from a direct appropriation to a statutory, and neither the House or the Senate picked that up. The Senate and the House are both proposing to do the increasing the current appropriation out of FMIA by $2 million per year. This would help offset some of the general fund cuts. However, the Senate makes this a one-time appropriation for 12 and 13 only. The House makes it ongoing. The forest easement change here on line 124, this was a governor's proposal of using some outdoor heritage fund money and putting it into an account and then spending the interest off that account on easement costs. And I believe the House is addressing this issue in their dedicated funding bill. Forest campground fees, this again is just a moving of money from the general fund over to the natural resources fund. This is just on line 125. Is this a switch in how the money what fund the money gets spent out of? So that's not actually an increase. The next few changes there are all blanks on that. Those are tied to the governor moving money for funding parks to a statutory. The governor wanted to make all the parks funding a statutory appropriation instead of a direct, and the House and Senate is keeping the parks appropriations as direct. Line 129, both the House and Senate increased the spending coming out of the current park accounts where all the park fees go into. The Senate is upping that by $1 million per year. The House is at the governor's level, which was $750,000 per year. Line 130, the House has picked, this is one of the House's pieces about addressing the invasive species. The House is doing $1 million per year for water access sites. This was a governor's position. Again, this money's coming out of the water access account. Like I said, the Senate does something similar. We just did it out of a different account. Both the House and the Senate have increases out of the State Park and Trails Lottery in lieu accounts. The Senate's at $400,000 per year. The House is at $600,000. And then similar for the local Park and Trails Lottery in lieu accounts. The House and Senate are at the same level. And then the snowmobile grant and aid on line 133, the House and Senate have increases there. The House is at double the amount at $200,000 per year instead of the Senate's level $100,000. And then the last one on this page is a Senate-only provision from Senator Miller, was proposing increasing or charging non-residents for off-highway vehicle trail passes. And this would we had to do some one-time cost to set up the ELS system to handle this, and then later on there's some revenues coming into that account from this change. On the page 3, continuing with the DNR, Natural Resources Fund, the House had on line 135 is spending some $200,000 out of the outdoor heritage, or not the outdoor, the off-highway vehicle damage account, and spending that money on trail grants. The Senate proposed a little bit different scenario where we would transfer that money to the ATV account one time and then spend the money, I believe, on the forest roads. So both sides move money out of the outdoor, out of the off-highway vehicle damage account and spend it for the most part on ATVs, but in a little bit different manner. Line 136 is where the House has covered the cost for that Lake County ATV trail. Again, they did it with the appropriation out of the ATV account of $100,000. The Senate did it with general fund dollars. Line 137 is a governor's proposal to increase ATV trails funding by $300,000 per year. They're the same on that. Line 138, the House has also picked up a governor's rec for $100,000 per year for ATV trail maps. That's a one-time appropriation. The Senate did not do that recommendation. The next lines, 139 through 146, are all governor's recs for spending a little bit of extra money out of all these dedicated trail accounts for enforcement. So all this money would go to the Division of Enforcement, and the House did not pick up any of those governor's recs. The last changes in the Natural Resources Fund that neither the House or the Senate picked up, the governor had proposed spending some increased money out of some of the dedicated trail accounts to basically their general operations to help offset the general fund reduction. It was over $1 million. You'll see there in the Senate minus Gov column how much the governor had proposed spending out of these accounts going for operations, and neither the House or the Senate picked that up. So total Natural Resources Fund changes on line 153. You'll see the Senate and the House are pretty close. $20 million of new spending out of the Natural Resources Fund. But again, half of this is due to the transfer of water fees from one fund to the other. So it's really about $10 million on each side of new spending out of the Natural Resources Fund. The last section here on DNR, line 155, are changes out of the Game and Fish Fund. The first one, line 156, is again one of the pieces of how the Senate funds invasive species. The Senate takes $1 million per year from the Heritage Enhancement Account within the Game and Fish Fund to fund the water access sites. So it's the same level that the governor and the House is at on this program, but it makes it one time and just out of a different account. The House and the Senate both have some new money coming out of the Heritage Enhancement Accounts for forest native plant mapping. This was the governor's initiative. The Senate funds it at $1.3 million and the House at $2 million. The next one, the line 159, the Senate funds the Let's Go Fishing program at $200,000 one time. This is a program that's been funded previously in this bill. Both sides have the Land Prairie Pass acquisition. This was a governor's rec. The next lines, 161 and 162, were governor's recs tied to the increase in hunting and fishing licenses. And the House and Senate did not pick up those increases in spending and either the hunting or fishing licenses increases. Line 163 and 164, this is one area where the House did pick up the governor's recs to make all the spending out of the dedicated stamp accounts statutory spending, and the Senate is sticking with the current law of making it all direct appropriations. However, the line 163 is sort of a net adjustment that we had to make on all the accounts. Some accounts are bringing in a little bit less money and some are more, but it's a net reduction of $528,000 per year out of all those different stamp accounts. Lines 165 and 166 are again tied to the governor's proposal to increase hunting and fishing fees, and that money and that portion that would have been going for enforcement. So you see there is about $6.3 million. The governor had increased money for enforcement that neither the House or the Senate are doing. The Senate picked up a little bit extra money out of the governor's rec, out of spending a little bit of extra money out of the Heritage Enhancement Account for peace officer for the officers' training academies. This was one portion of the governor's proposals for enforcement that the Senate did pick up. And then the last one here, line 168, again, was the governor's proposal for making an ongoing appropriation out of the Game and Fish Fund. This is dedicated money coming in, this $135,000 per year. That's supposed to go for peace officer training, and this is just making it an ongoing statutory appropriation. So the net, the Senate spends close to $3.5 million new money out of the Game and Fish Fund, and the House is at about 1.8. So the total you'll see for DNR spending, if you account changes in all the funds, the Senate's reduction compared to the base, you'll see on line 183, is $5.585 million, or less than 1% reduction. And the House is at $12.9 million reduction when you count all funds. Again, you'll see the general fund subtotal below that on line 185. We covered that earlier. The last part of this page dealing with DNR are the revenue changes. And starting here on line 187, this was a governor's rec where we moved the forest campground fees from the general fund to the natural resources fund. So this is just moving fee money from one fund to another. Same with line 188. This is dealing with the water fees that are currently going to the general fund. Will now go to the natural resources fund. Line 189 is the first part of the revenue that's generated in the Senate proposal to selling the state nurseries and the assets. The way it works, the Senate would have $3.6 million go to the general fund, and then later on line 193, $1 million would be going to the natural resources fund, specifically the forest management investment account. Neither side did the governor's rec for hunting and fishing licenses increases. Both sides, the House and Senate, are doing on lines 191 and 192. This is where it's the governor's proposal to have other funds fully cover the cost of the forestry expenses. And this, the way the governor had structured it is, certain portions of the Game and Fish Fund would now be assessed costs for forestry services. So the way we're accounting for this, both the House and the Senate, are by showing a reduction in revenues for Game and Fish Fund and then an increase in revenues for the FMIA. 193, again, is the portion of the Senate proposal to end the state nurseries and selling the assets. Line 194 and 195 is part of the Senate's proposal of dealing with invasive species. Currently, there was water rec money being transferred from the water rec account over to the, there's a special invasive species account. In the current biennium, there is a transfer being made, but that was one time. The Senate is continuing that transfer, but also increasing it by, I believe, $350,000 per year. This more is to keep all the invasive species prevention spending all out of that account. It's a little bit easier to track over time then. Line 196 is, again, the Senator Miller proposal to have non-residents being able to purchase the off-highway vehicle trail pass. This brings in a little bit of revenue, $12,000 for the biennium. Line 197 is the governor's proposal for recovering the cost for aquatic plant management. This would be the fees paid by shore residents to help manage their weeds. And the House or the Senate did not accept that proposal. Line 198 was the governor's proposal for watercraft fee increases. The House or Senate are both not doing that. Line 199 is part of the proposal to move water fees from the general fund to the natural resources fund, so that is just a fund swap. The line 200 is the governor's proposal for the interest earned on moving the Outdoor Heritage Fund proposal into an account, and then this would be the interest earned off that account that would be then spent on easements. Then the last one, 201, is also just a fund swap. So the Senate's revenue changes are $4.672 million, and 4.6 of that is strictly one time due to the sale of the nurseries. And you see over in the House side, they have no other fee increases. All their revenue changes are just moving money between funds. So, Mr. Chair, that is it for the DNR.
Okay, Mr. Mueller, I think we'll go to Mr. Reinholtz. And Mr. Reinholtz, I understand that Commissioner Austin is going to be here shortly. So these are smaller agencies, so whenever the commissioner shows up, we'll just finish the agency you're on and then move to the commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'll start on page four then.
You know what, Mr. Reinholtz, why don't you hold on for a second? Mr. Kudelka, is the commissioner or commissioner, are you ready to go? I know you just, why don't you come forward if you would? We were just going to start with another spreadsheet agency, but I know your energy level, Commissioner Austin, something you and I have in common, so we're going to be able to find a way to get through where we're at. Welcome back from St. Cloud. No speeding tickets?
No, Mr. Chair, no speeding tickets, and I think some of Senator Ingebrigtsen's former colleagues were looking after me.
Good. No, thank you. Welcome, Commissioner. If you could identify yourself for the record, and I believe we have a letter from you either in our packet or somewhere.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Austin. I'm the Commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency. And you should have a letter, and I'm just going to date it the 27th, and it lays out a number of issues, and I'm just going to essentially walk through the numbered issues in rapid order. I understand you have a time barrier that you're working against as well, and then answer questions, and we can carry on conversation as we need to after that.
It's been our we've let you go through, Commissioner, if you want to go through all your comments, and then we'll save the conference committee members' questions for after you've gotten through your comments. I do want to let you know, Commissioner, it's just a few minutes before 11, and there is a very busy committee scheduled here at noon, and we certainly have to allow some time before that to transfer the room over, but I think we have plenty of time for you to do so. Your timing has been very good. Commissioner Austin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in terms of specific concerns we have between the House and the Senate proposals, the first concern that our agency has really deals with Clean Water Partnership grants, and there are certainly differing reductions in both of the bills, but with reductions on either side, it will affect grants to local units of government, and I just came from the Minnesota Waters Conference talking to the people who do this local work, and clearly they're very interested in continuing to do that, and their partnership will be important as we move forward. The second item that is on our list of concerns has to do with the SSTS funding and reductions in both base grants and guidance and technical assistance for counties. The SST issue, as you all well know, is not done. It's not going away. It's an issue that continues to be one that we talk to the counties about frequently. Clearly, they are asking for assistance and the ability to do some more things than they've been able to do in the past, and we're interested in supporting that, and this would affect our ability to do that. The Senate bill has a reduction in water operations funding, and this would go directly to some of our ambient water monitoring services. Clearly, we need to test and assess waters to know where they are to bring to bear the Clean Water Act and all the processes that come with that. So we have concerns about cuts to that ability and that function. Both of the bills, the House and the Senate bill, reduce county feedlot grants. On average, $4,000 to $2,000 reductions in assistance to counties who locally administer the state's program. I think it's interesting to kind of compare and contrast the feedlot program with the SSTS program. Both require a degree of outreach and assistance from our agency. Both require a commitment and some level of resource allocation from the counties. I think the feedlot program on the whole is working better than the SSTS program is right now, and that's something that we're interested in talking to the counties about as well, how we can make both programs work well. And so we would be reluctant to see a reduction in the capability of that program in the next biennium. The fifth item on our list really deals with the Environmental Health Tracking and Biomonitoring Program. This is a reduction in the research on PFCs, mercury, other harmful pollutants to human health. When you look at the charge of the Pollution Control Agency, there's really two prongs to it. It's to protect Minnesotans and Minnesota. And this is one of the major pieces of how you do public health. You need to know what is out there, what people are being contacted with, what potentially are the issues that can come to bear. So this is an item that we would be very sad to see go as part of budget cuts. Both the House and the Senate bills have reductions in our environmental assistance and multimedia programs. There's a potential in these to cause delays in municipal wastewater permits. For both facilities and industries, there's potential for some longer delays, a month to maybe a month and a half, depending on how you look at how we choose to allocate and reallocate within those systems. I think it's important to recognize that the Pollution Control Agency is a little bit unique as an agency. I've seen a lot of organizations over my time, and the Pollution Control Agency works across silos better than any organization I know. So cuts in an area do affect other areas, and environmental assistance supports a lot of activity across all of our other work. Our seventh item is a concern about just general reductions in administrative and support operations. Obviously, across-the-board cuts are hard. The last table that you can see on the letter we gave you is an estimated FTE reductions based on the bills as they sit now, along with some other concerns that we've got. You know, at one point, this agency was close to 1,200 people. We're just over 900 now, probably in the range of 850 or so based on our assumptions around federal cuts and how this legislative discussion is going, potentially much greater cuts than that over time. At some point, we do reach a bottom, and we will have to start changing what we do and how we do it much more dramatically. Where that bottom is, I can't tell you today. I can tell you that we anticipate to gain efficiency through technology, through improved business processes, but if the economy starts to boom, which we all hope it does, we will also have more customers, and we would hope that we'd be able to deal with permits in a timely manner going forward. There's an elimination in both the House and the Senate bill of LCCMR funding for Minnesota schools conserving energy and water. We've talked about this issue before. The only way to get people to start making environmental decisions, part of everyday decisions, is to integrate it into every aspect of what we're doing. It should be as common sense as worrying about the price on a product or the location of the property you're buying, or the type of car you're buying, and involving schools in that process early is where you get people thinking that way. The Senate has a reduction on the revenues generated from penalties. This is an example in a way of a form of a funding shift. It changes the balance in how we've been able to manage the environmental fund. We have some concerns about managing in that kind of a fiscal structure. Similarly, the Senate has a cap on the transfer of dollars from the Environmental Fund to the Remediation Fund, which reduces our ability to clean things up. You can make an argument on some level, I suppose, that the Pollution Control Agency's job should be to identify pollution problems and regulate them, but we do also end up with the responsibility to clean them up and fix them after the fact, and we'd hate to see that capacity diminished. The closed landfill program is in the process, in fact, of closing. Over the next 3 or 4 years, we're anticipating all but a couple of the toughest nuts will be fixed. That's going to be a great success story. So the remediation fund is a piece of that puzzle as well. We've talked a lot over time about wild rice. As you know, we've had good progress between a number of parties working on protocol for figuring out what the wild rice standard could be, should be, if it should be revised. Setting standards in state statute is something EPA continues to tell us will not fly. We are actively in conversation with EPA and a number of folks about other ideas of ways to create some description of how we would manage our regulatory duties in the meantime. I don't have any solid answers for you today, but it is something that we will continue to work on. The Senate bill modifies the feedlot permitting system. This has potential to create a more complex system rather than simplifying it. We've had a chance to chat with some of the interests in the feedlot conversation. It's never a simple conversation when you're dealing with feedlots, but it's an issue that we definitely think is worth talking about some more. Lastly, there are some moratoria on rulemaking in the Senate bill, and clearly we have concerns about specific moratoria. I think there's still a need for a conversation about rulemaking and how it fits in to the process between legislative action, administrative interpretation and action, and something more formal in between. We'd be happy to be part of that conversation going forward. Perhaps that's something we can talk about after we get this session behind us. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you. Questions for Commissioner Austin. Commissioner Austin, I've got a couple of them. We've had some good discussions, and some of the pressure on the environmental fund. Is the agency ready to look at? You talked about the pressures of on the agency to look at reducing staff. It seems like the net that you've casted is very broad and sometimes reaches out where other agencies are working on some things. And some of that is being funded out of the environmental fund. We've had discussions about the eco-services, the role that the agency plays at the state fair, and some different ones like that. Wondering if you're prepared to get serious about looking at the role of the MPCA and how it should concentrate more on the importance of permitting and moving our state forward and doing the important regulatory work that you do and working with citizens and businesses in the important parts of it and probably looking at this net that's been cast needs to get brought in a little bit. Commissioner Austin.
Mr. Chair, that is the question that every one of us faces right now in the midst of anticipated budget cuts. I mean, I'm not assuming the PCA budget will not be cut either through the governor's recs or as the conversation moves forward. I think there's two faces to the conversation about core services. You can look at the PCA as a permitting agency, but every constituency I've talked to has been asking for more assistance, more technical assistance, more permitting assistance, more regulatory assistance. So there's that facet of the net that people are asking us to do more of. There are also, you know, things that are optional or things that are maybe wise to do, but we may not be able to afford to do. Environmental education is an example of an item that has waxed and waned over time. It's been done better. It's been done worse over time. Clearly, if we're looking at budget cuts, it's an item we definitely would consider. We definitely have to take a look at it, figure out what the relative investment is out of a staff of 900 and a budget as large as ours. I mean, how many dollars should we spend on environmental education? What role can we play to access other networks of folks who do environmental educating to get whatever information we may hold out to them? We're very much open to that. The Eco Experience does have a track record of some success. 300,000 people a year come through there. And so whether it's the PCA or some other entity who's doing that environmental education, I think it is a valuable tool. And I think the question is to figure out how to do it within the means that we've got.
Well, if
we have any means.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I agree with you. Things like the Eco Experience are great at the state fair, but I think it's a fair question. What's the role state government should play in bringing that forward? You just came from a group that's very active in things like that.
Yes.
Hopefully they can have a larger role in a number of these activities. Commissioner Austin.
Mr. Chair, I think that would be ideal because it's not healthy for the state agencies alone to carry the lead. I mean, if we can have more people involved in the conversation, the better.
Thank you. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Austin, welcome. I haven't had a chance to meet you yet. I have two questions, Mr. Chair, if that's okay. Actually, so I would assume, since you skipped over the Senate removal of the mandatory environmental review for ethanol plants over 5 million gallons, you're okay with that now. Is that correct?
Commissioner Austin.
Senator Rosen, no, we are not.
That's too bad, because that's my bill.
Senator Rosen.
That is important.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Commissioner Austin, my real question is, as far as the job growth and economic recovery in the state, and you go and talk to any job creator, whether they're planning on moving here or growing here, and you talk about what can we do to help you, and there's a whole list of issues that are addressed by these people. But one of the top ones is our permitting process coming out of the MPCA and the regulations and the struggle it is to get anything permitted in the state. So my question to you, and obviously every department, everybody in the state is going to have to take a hit and join in this recovery process that we have. How are you going to make this department work better for us so we can optimize and grow like we need to grow? Because this, I live very close to Iowa, and they have been extremely aggressive in their welcome mat to other companies coming in, actively pursuing these other companies. And then when it comes time to go through environmental permitting of any kind, they help them out, and they have a very aggressive policy towards what can we do to help you instead of penalizing you, which seems to be the attitude that some of these businesses feel is coming from the PCA. So my question to you is hopefully we are going to see a change in attitude from the PCA as far as regulation and more of a helping hand is what I'm trying to say. So can you do this with these cuts?
Mr. Commissioner Austin. Sure.
Senator Rosen, two or three things. First of all, the agency recognized some time ago that it was not turning permits in the manner it wanted to in terms of timeliness, predominantly on the water side. And if you go back to about 2002 and you look at the speed at which water permits are issued today compared to 2002, there's been a dramatic improvement. It's actually slowed down a little bit that now with some of the cuts stacking up over the last few years. But it's still much better than it was. Part of that process invoked Six Sigma and Lean-style organizational redesign thinking. So the organization itself has a long history of thinking about business processes and optimizing them within the resource constraints that exist within the agency. So that will continue. The markers that House File 1 puts out there are reminders for the agency about goals that it's aiming at. And in many cases, the agency already was at or ahead of those goals right now. So that's good because the experience exists. As long as we don't lose too many staff hours, just in a raw staff hour sense, we're hopeful. We have work we can do on the technology side to improve some of the speed, improve some of the timeliness of communication with proposers. So that will all help that business side of the case. There's an effort that you're going to start hearing about called the Minnesota Enterprise Assistance Group. Starting, largely in late 2008 into 2009, really kind of coming into play in 2010, the state has had a multi-agency Green Enterprise Assistance Group. That is, goes across all the agencies you would hope are involved. And that effort is being expanded to not just be Green Enterprise, but to be multiple enterprises. And DEED, the Department of Employment and Economic Development, is the lead agency. There's an economic development component to this effort. There's a regulatory piece to this effort. And there's kind of an infrastructure and support piece to this effort. The goal is to create that point of entry for that business in the conversation, or the point of outreach in the case of DEED in that conversation. We obviously have a role to play in one sector of that conversation, and we, are big proponents of this. Some of the staff in the PCA are very active on it, and I think that goes to a piece of your question. Specific to the Iowa question, there are bits and pieces of this puzzle that are in our control and some that are not. Iowa is in Region 5 of the EPA. Region 7 of the EPA. Minnesota's in Region 5. What Region 5 and Region 7 ask for in their air quality permits right now is a little bit different, and Region 5's are more stringent. Not necessarily in terms of the standards they're asking for, but the information that's asked for in that permit. So we've got the start of a dialogue with EPA on why. Why are there differences between Regions 5 and Region 7? That's a piece of the puzzle. We have this need for outreach on our part and timeliness, which is a piece of the puzzle. And then the other is we have always had an open invitation to sectors or individual permittees to get assistance from the agency, and there still are sectors that are unwilling to do that for a number of reasons. And I've been trying to open those channels of communication. The folks that work on things like the Enterprise Assistance Group are trying to open those lines of communication to utilize the willingness that exists today for agencies and proposers to work better together. When they do, things work really well. The Granite Falls ethanol expansion went through with a negative declaration on a need for environmental review. I signed that. There is a big expansion. There's a whole lot of conversation between the proposer and the agency. They brought in a proposal that didn't even increase the use of water to go through that kind of an expansion. That's what we all need. So it is possible to do it. We're willing to do that. The agency's been poised to do that. We probably just haven't told our story well enough.
Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, thank you for that. And is it just the air quality that's the difference between the EPA 5 and EPA 7? Or is this what you're trying to find out if it goes beyond just air?
Commissioner Austin.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the air quality issues are the most obvious ones. If you go to the state level of the conversation, obviously we have a lot different water resources in Minnesota than they do in Iowa. So you see a difference on our regulation of water. So some of it, like I said, there's a difference at the federal level. Some of it is a state-to-state level difference.
Senator Rosen.
And Commissioner, it's very good to hear that there are these partnerships, this collaboration between the different departments. I mean, this is very, very important because the MPCA is extremely integral on the state's recovery. Mm-hmm. Your part is extremely important for these job creators and how it's handled and that relationship that goes on while still protecting the environment. So I just want to stress that I do live out in Greater Minnesota and I hear a lot about it. Mm-hmm. And we do not sit on environment, but it is very, very important. We hear about a lot, taxes even, the role of the PCA. So I just wanted to pass that on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I have two quick questions, one on number 10 relating to the environmental fund and the remediation efforts. Do you have like a list, like a waiting list for those remediation efforts, or how does that handle? I don't recall the testimony in any hearings that I was involved with on that.
Commissioner Austin.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, there's not necessarily a formal broadly held list like there is for PFA and wastewater treatment facilities, but within the agency, within the program, there's definitely a working list of which projects are in the remediation queue, which ones we think we can get to when, which ones are ready, all that kind of thing. We'd be happy to provide that information.
Senator Peterson.
So do you have a list of right now, do you have an idea of how much money, you know, that list, because in theory that the hope is that would eventually all go away, right?
Commissioner Austin.
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, we do have that kind of a list. I don't have it with me, but we could be more than happy to get it to you. If you take a look at the information that's in the governor's bonding bill proposal, you'll see some of that information as well, and that reflects some of our priority planning.
Senator Peterson.
Okay, thank you. And then on number 14, I...
Senator Peterson, excuse me. I think your fiscal staff has a comment directly related to the one... Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yes, if I could, thank you, Mr. Chair, have our fiscal staff comment on number 10 there on the $5.652 million reduction for mediation.
And then, Senator Peterson, you still have the floor. We'll come back to you. Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman and members, what the Senate has done here is similar to what we did in the current biennium, is where we cap, under current law, the PCA has a open authority to move as much money as it wants between the environmental fund and the remediation fund. And what we did in the current biennium and what the Senate is proposing here is to set a limit on the amount they can transfer between those two funds. What the Senate is proposing is actually an increase. The current cap was, I think, at 40 or 41 million. 40? And what the Senate has done here is capped it at 42 million for the next biennium. So it's actually an increased amount in what the PCA could transfer from the environmental fund to the remediation fund for cleanup purposes. Part of the reason the Senate is doing this is sort of to keep the environmental fund in the black long term. And granted, the Senate did move some of the fees going into the environmental fund out to the general fund. So this was part of the overall proposal to keep the environmental fund in the black while also increasing the amount of money that would go for remediation cleanup that's coming out of the environmental fund, not as much as what the agency has maybe proposed, but it's still an increase over current spending.
Commissioner Austin.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Mueller. That is accurate, and I think the last point is the point we would be making.
Right.
It's not as much as we proposed. And you can see the intricacies of starting to cap and shift and how it really changes how you can play within the budget. And
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. And on number 14, I've seen this pop up a few times today, and I'm a little surprised. I can understand the tremendous amount of staff that's tied up in rulemaking and the effect that might have on budgets, and I think it's important. But I think you're aware of we've gone through significant efforts to exempt the rules that folks wanted to continue to work on, and extended some deadlines and made changes that allow for emergency rules and a number of the things that keep that process moving forward. And so do you feel like you still have rules that need to be exempt from this, particular bill or this part of the bill?
Commissioner Austin.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, there's a couple ways you can look at this issue. One is you can go through and make a whole series of exemptions and deal with timelines and datelines. And I appreciate you're willing to do this. But I think there's also a broader conversation that needs to take place around the genesis of the concerns and how the system actually plays together. I know that, often, particularly with water rulemaking, the concerns that are cited are overlaps or underlaps or confusion with water regulation. My experience in the past and in the last 4 months talking to people who are out on the ground is it's not so much at the state level. I mean, when you get into the water issue, where you hear about confusion is right on the ground, and it's when you have watershed districts and cities and counties and the state and the feds and park districts and all those interplays that come to bear on a development proposal, for example. So, we can talk about specific exemptions, but I think perhaps there's a different conversation that needs to be held.
Senator Peterson.
So, Commissioner, is it your belief that there isn't this duplication in water rules across your five agencies, including yours, or
Commissioner Austin?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think the duplication is a lot less than people expect.
Senator Peterson.
I mean, do you see is that a potential solution, as maybe having one person do two or three of the inspections instead of having two or three separate people go out to the same site?
Commissioner Austin.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, I think the frequency at which you have multiple state inspectors on that site is exceedingly rare, because we don't have that kind of reach. Again, this is where you end up with the potential for someone from the city and someone from the county, and then you add us in on top of it. And so that's where I think there's a much different kind of conversation that needs to be held to sort out that issue. It's one of the issues that Deputy Commissioner Stein is interested in working on in our agency. The word confusion continues to come up when we start talking about local, very much local water supply issues, water management issues, and we're very interested in continuing that conversation.
Senator Peterson.
And I should just double check, because we did have significant testimony that gave real-world examples of that duplication. Do you feel like you've been informed of those?
Commissioner Austin.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I've had a long history in water regulation, and I do have a feel for the concerns. And again, we've drilled down when we hear about issues through our agency as well. We used to drill down to these agencies at the organization I just worked at. And the frequency of overlap between the layers of government is critical and key to this conversation. So I wouldn't hinge it all at the state level.
Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Nope, I would just encourage you then. I know I have a meeting with your staff still coming up. I'm not sure if that's next week or farther out than that, but I would make the same offer to you. Still, if there's rules, like I said, I want to make it clear that there has been significant delay in the hearings just to accommodate state agency requests on rules, and I think that's been more than fair, and I'd like this, staff and the commissioners to recognize that this has come very much closer to the middle than I originally started out, and I'm really disappointed folks aren't recognizing that. So.
Senator Ingebrigtsen. Thank you, Senator Peterson. Or do you want comment, Senator Peterson? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Austin, for taking the time today. Just a couple comments with regards to your letter. I'm glad we cleared up that number 10 there. I think that's a little more clear now to the committee. But the number 8, when you talk about LCCMR, those were at the very, very least, the very tough things we did over there, being new members and due to with the good work over there. But I just wanted to point out that during that committee meeting, there were 22 or 24 actually bills, different funding mechanisms that were taken from there and put towards emerging issues. That was voted upon by the whole group, and I just wanted to point that out. And my second thing I'd like to point out is that I'm glad to hear your willingness to work with in representing the governor with the agencies and with the House and the Senate to resolve this less than friendly atmosphere that we have here with this budget situation. By House File Number 1, that certainly was a good indication that the governor and the House and Senate and your office is willing to work together with addressing issues, just as Senator Rosen talked about earlier, and that's getting the permitting process a little more streamlined, and we certainly appreciate the work that you did on that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your willingness to work with us as well.
Thank you, Commissioner. You were not here for me to ask the previous commissioners and directors, but this is a very appropriate point to make at the end. But I know with your closeness to the governor, are you here on his behalf and empowered to negotiate for the governor on these important issues? Senator Ingebrigtsen and our entire conference committee look forward to working with you, and just want to confirm that you are here on behalf of the governor's office and willing to work with us and be serious and represent his wishes as we go forward to find a solution to the serious issues before us.
Mr. Chair, clearly the cabinet represents both the agencies that they work directly for and the governor as an executive. The governor's request. And having been part of the part of negotiations between the governor's office and the legislative body in a different setup, in a three-way setup, we are here to represent the governor's request as well, that the House and the Senate reconcile their differences on the bill. And then we'll have conversations between the governor's budget and that position at that point in time. Obviously, we're information resources. Obviously, we're here to be part of the process. But There will be times and places where we will suggest that the issues need to be reconciled between the House and the Senate before we'll step into that conversation.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. I just want to make sure that I know you're not going to always personally be here, but one of your representatives will. And we want to get serious now and want you to be serious, and I appreciate that. We have had a good working relationship with you and your agency in these tough situations. Members, we do not have the next meeting scheduled, but I anticipate Senator Ingebrigtsen knows the importance of moving forward now. And so at that, if there's no additional comments, members, we're adjourned.
This afternoon.
Sunday.
Much lower than
we thought.
I trust you. What FDR?
That thing's all
right. What FDR are you?
Tuesday.
Yeah,
piece of cake.